Before we get started real quick, I wanted to do a shout out to the guys at the Underground Ink podcast. They have an alternative commentary podcast where you can watch a movie and listen to their commentary about the movie in the background. Unfortunately, they're going on hiatus, maybe permanently, but I wanted to thank them for all the years and all the time they spent on their podcast. It was a great podcast. You can find it at undergroundink.info. And I'll put a link in the show notes. You can still go back and listen to the back catalog. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll hear from you again in the future. With that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Comics have been read. Action figures assembled. Video games have been played. A battle decades in the making. Two nerds enter the arena to do battle. Two nerds leave the arena more nerdy than ever. It's time for a nerd deathmatch.
We've got Eddie and Jeff, and then I've got my backup here for our nerd deathmatch, Lee Bachma. And we're going to duke it out again. I'll put a link in the show notes for the previous Mega Death Match so that you can listen to that one after you listen to this one.
Mega Death.
Exactly. So we'll go ahead and do quick introductions so that you as a listener know who's talking and you can join in and on the fun. So I'm Lee with the Covert Nerd Podcast.
I'm Lee from Art of Lee Bachma. And for you Mega guys, you guys have some ground to make up. I think we kind of really kicked your butts last time.
I know. There was a trouncing, I think.
That's right. My left cheek is still left at the last place we recorded.
It's hanging off by a piece of meat.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Eddie from the Make Eternia Great Again podcast and a whole bunch of other shows, too. But that's the one we're here about. We're representing.
Representing.
And I'm Jeff Geegan from the Make Eternia Great Again podcast, otherwise known as Mega.
Yeah, so we might refer to it as Mega a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun, guys. I really enjoy these. And the way it works for you, the listener, if you don't know, what we do is we take three characters. So the Mega guys are going to be picking characters from the Master of the Universe, because that's what the show is about, that they do. And then Lee and I are just picking other characters from pop culture, typically the past. And then we kind of deep dive into the characters themselves. And then we talk about, okay, if they're going to get in a fight, what's going to happen? Who wins? And that's what Lee was talking about. I think we might be a few points ahead, but we'll see after today.
I feel like even though we're at war here, we're still friends.
Yes.
But also...
Maybe not after today.
Maybe not. But there was at least consensus when we did our mock battle. We were able to be like, okay, like we do concede. Yes, Ram Man would probably be defeated by...
Juggernaut.
By Juggy. Juggernaut.
I've been having nightmares about that.
I know. So, with that being said, we're ready.
It is a nerd death match, so it doesn't get too
We
violent.
Feel bad for you guys on this one.
It's a gentleman's battle.
Yeah, we always pick a really big table, too, so no dukes can be swung that far.
It's hard to lunge across this one.
Throw stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
The board fries. Jeez, no more. We're never doing this again.
I guess there was an accident.
That's right.
Now, that's what I call podcasting.
That's right. Man, it was crazy. It's like UHF. All right. Anyways, cool.
Let's start. So we've got our first nerd death battle is going to be Teela from MOTU and then Red Sonja from, we'll get into it.
What a great matchup.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, there's already a disadvantage for MOTU because Teela is one of four ladies total.
You're right.
Not a lot of females.
Very dude heavy. It is. And we wanted to kind of treat this like a sport. We didn't want to match up Red Sonja against, He-Man per se. So this is a better lineup, I think.
Right.
Cool.
Well, I also want to mention too that with this matchup, we hold a lot of polls on our Facebook page, and we did this poll between Teela and Red Sonja. It was probably one of our most
participants.
Yeah, I think
voters.
We had almost 1,000.
The turnout was good.
It was huge. I think this one, and we did Skeletor versus Darth Vader were the two biggest participants.
Really?
Yeah, participating in polls. So they're both about 1,000 apiece. So it's pretty crazy. So
Do you guys want to go first? Teela? Let's hear about Teela.
Should we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go. Let's get ready. Here we go. Right.
Ding, ding, ding.
Tila. So her origin is kind of like a little bit up for grabs, but we definitely find out throughout. And I'm going to kind of lean more on the cartoon, I guess, Jeff.
Yeah.
Because
if you don't know Motu, there's always a different
pick
version.
Pick your Motu. But Tila, initially in the series, is viewed as Man-at-Arms' daughter. They don't even really say adoptive daughter in the show. They just say that she is Man-at-Arms' daughter. And so you're like, oh, Duncan, single dad. Pat, single dad life. And then later on in the series, it's revealed to you that Man-at-Arms, the pre-mustachioed Man-at-Arms, yes. was led to a special place by a falcon, an orange and blue falcon. No doubt, no less.
Correct.
And then climbed up a mountain to see what this falcon was leading him towards. And it ended up being what, Jeff?
A baby.
As you tend to find. In a human baby. And so then basically, I think telepathically, yeah, if I remember right, because the falcon did not take on the form of the sorceress.
Correct.
In front of him.
It was just Zor.
Zoar, yep. Was like, you know, whoa, 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 like the Duncan,
Aquaman.
You need to adopt this child. So he's like, I found a baby in a nest. Now I'm her daddy. So he took the baby down and raised her to be, pardon the French, a badass warrior.
That's right.
And so she grew up to be the head of the guard for King Randor. And the idea being that she was a butt-kicking warrior who took no guff, least alone from Prince Adam.
Yes.
And featured heavily in almost, not every episode, but a lot of the episodes.
Almost all of them.
And yeah. Never really, I think only once or twice shown as needing any sort of help. I mean,
correct.
For the most part, she was always kind of like a reinforcement, or she was there to, you know, kick some teeth in.
Right.
Very able-bodied. And in a lot of cases, air quotes, would save Adam from stuff and was, you know, perpetually put off by him. But she kind of like perfected the bicycle kick too, like the roundhouse.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Well, not bicycle, but like the roundhouse kick.
Yeah.
It was the Tila special.
Yeah, with six-inch heels.
Six-inch heels to the face.
That's right.
Because that's what you wear in combat.
But absolutely. Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I mean... as far as the series goes, I mean, her being teamed up against, like, well, fighting against the different Motu villains, I mean, she never really once got, like, bested by anybody. I think there's a couple times where Beast Man put some hands on her.
Sure.
And she was able to, like, you know.
Yeah, he's just bear hugging her.
Yeah. Kind of thing. But yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you talked about, like, the difference between, like, the cartoon and the comic book version of Tila. Because the cartoon, she was a much stronger character. But if you look at the comic book version, especially the first half dozen or so issues, like, she's basically the damsel in distress.
Yes.
Almost for He-Man to rescue. There's so many scenes where, like, Beast-Man's got her slung over his shoulder, unconscious, and He-Man's got to come to the rescue. And it's like a totally different character, almost, between the comic and the cartoon.
And it shows such a split between, like, you know, how they were handling that whole thing. You know, they didn't know what they were doing.
Well, we have to make point that, keep in mind, the first iteration of Tila in the comic book, she was blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she went to redhead, then she was a BA. And I will say, in real life, that's usually how it goes.
how it plays out.
Well, in the comic books, it was a mess. Like the first four or six issues, because you had the one figure of Tila, but in all the comic books, she was a blonde Tila.
Yeah,
she was like a redhead Tila.
Yep.
She was like the green goddess.
Yep.
She was like a snake goddess in one. Like she was different. Like in every comic book,
they didn't
only
know
one figure.
Yeah. They didn't know what they were doing. Like you guys,
they're just cutting cocaine on the table at that point. Just like, what? Wait, she should be green.
What?
Yeah,
do it.
Goddess
or dartboard?
Was she a goddess though? Yeah,
I mean she's a goddess to me.
That's right.
Wink, wink.
That's right.
And then also there was the live action movie version of Tila, which was you know more of a sci-fi armor looking, you know, and still very much kind of they put this across kind of a bad A, but never really
and
had
brunette.
And brunette.
Yeah,
right. Hair color.
She just didn't know how to fire a gun though.
Yeah,
you remember that? And she'd have like the gun up like. Almost up to her chest.
Yeah, kind of her chest.
Like, there was like my hands are cold. Pew pew pew.
Yeah, and she was disgusted by the notion of eating ribs.
Oh, yeah.
Ribs, yes.
Just put her off completely.
This used to be on an animal.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah. Ew.
Ew.
What are those white? What was it? It was like it's so nice.
Why is this meat on these tiny little white sticks?
Oh, this food's like, on the white.
How
sticks.
How did they get this on these little white sticks?
That's what she said. And her dad.
Oh, those rib bones. What? And she doesn't spit it out. She's like. Okay, guess. That's kind of gross. And then she Wilder's was, like, it tasted good. Let's get a barbecue sauce
down there.
Yes, flavor saver.
Oh, my gosh.
Good times.
I need to see this again now. But so there's very different versions of Tila, but the general narrative is that she's not someone to be trifled with, at least in the world of Motu.
And in the 2002 reboot, and maybe get your opinion on it, she seems dramatically different. A little more.
She's even more hardcore.
More hardcore. Yes.
That's what I took out of it. I've only seen about two or three episodes of that show, but when Tila's featured in there, there's no like messing around.
She's just pissed.
Like, yeah, she's angry all the time.
She's always.
Yeah,
mad.
She seems angry all the time.
She's always mad.
Even in the '80s. The '80s version, they kind of had moments where they showed her being a little bit sensitive, and her, even the tone of her voice would kind of soften a little bit.
Right.
But from the episodes and the clips I've seen, Tila's just like, just shooting things constantly. Just mad.
Blow stuff up.
Yeah.
It's like Tila. She put her hair up in a ponytail and was like, it's time for business.
I'm done.
Again, when you see a woman putting her hair up in a ponytail, something's going to happen.
Game on. She's like, the bun is over. I'm not doing this bun anymore.
That's right.
Yeah. No more tiara. She had a little tiara on this one.
Yeah, in the first one, she had a little tiara thing. Yeah.
Kind of nestled
in her
hair.
Well, I guess in the second one, she did,
She did, kind of. So kind of a decorative thing.
Yeah.
And in the second series, they showed her probably the original cartoon. They didn't really show her doing much leader of the guard stuff.
Correct.
They just kind of set it. Every so often, there'd be like the two guards standing there. And she'd be like, you two, go with this. Okay, Tila. And they'd run off. But it happened so rarely. So it was mostly a name only.
Right.
Feels like my job. But then in the 2002, you saw a much more like active dynamic. Like she was commanding legions of dudes. She'd be like, go. And you'd see like a whole contingency of people march off. So that was driven home a little bit more that she was clearly in the upper ranks of the Eternos guards.
Guards, because she was basically second in command to Man-at-Arms.
Man-at-Arms, yeah.
To Duncan.
Yeah. And if I ever get it right, Man-at-Arms' whole point is that he's kind of like the king's guy. So Tila listens to Man-at-Arms, and then that's where, you know, yeah.
We should also mention, though, too, that keep in mind there is a more stronger version of Tila. And that was when she was the goddess, though.
Oh, yeah. You should go into that.
So Tila was actually, I'm trying to remember. So she was actually made into the goddess.
Yes.
Because she was a follower of the goddess. Like, what would you call it? Not a follower, but.
Acolyte.
She was like a worshiper. There we go. Worshiper of the goddess. Knew her ways, blah, blah, blah. And then I forget exactly how it was, but something happened to the goddess. And so she was dying, and so she gave over the powers to Tila, right?
Now are you saying goddess or the sorceress?
No. I'm thinking of the goddess.
Yeah,
because Tila became the goddess.
Yes, in the 2002 series.
No.
I think this was in the Eternity War.
That's
DC.
Right. Yes.
And if
DC
I remember one. Right, like her and He-Man and Stratos like went into some sort of like the Well of Souls area, like the underworld or something like that. And you're right, like the previous sorceress was given her power from like the Falcon God or something. And when they went down there, like she had to sacrifice herself into the Well of Souls to save He-Man. But like in there, she was embodied by the snake goddess instead of the falcon. That's
the
why the other sorceress had like a falcon kind of vibe, and she came out as like the green snake looking lady.
Correct.
And she became like the goddess of all the snake men. So like all the snake men joined He-Man in his fight against the Horde, and it was like bonkers.
Right.
Yeah. She was super powerful.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, once again, pick your Tila. I mean, there's a lot of different versions of her, but the kind of the unifying theme is that she's not to be trifled with. And
if we're going for the win, I think that's the Tila I want.
Oh,
pick.
If you're going for the win, you go for Goddess Tila.
I was going to go with the comic book one where she has to be rescued.
Yeah, right. Good.
Like, oh no!
Oh, help me! She sees Red Sonja and runs away.
That's right.
That's how it plays
Done.
Out. But yeah, I mean, and Motu, you know, they try so hard, and it's not like unlike a lot of these franchises when like they start something and they don't quite know where they're going with it, and then the character continuously is changing, and just in this case, it's more drastic than others. But
yeah, it seems like she found her footing, or they found their footing on how they wanted to write her after about a year in or so.
Yeah, I agree, especially you know once the cartoon was going and I think for them the comic, and even if you watch the Toys That Made Us on Netflix, it's obvious the the comics were an afterthought. And yes. The guy even said that, like, yeah, and we'll do a comic too.
We're gonna throw a comic in there.
Oh, okay. Sort of how we do everything, it seems like. <That's right. laughs> On Mega.
What should we do?
Something else. Something cool. What are the kids like? Once it had been established, once you're like into year three of He-Man and you look at those episodes, you know who Teela is, you know what's happening. Mm-hmm. If she shows up on the scene, you know, bad guys are picking up their teeth, you know. So
they draw her in the cartoon like her head and hair looks a lot like Queen Marlena.
She has a Marlena look to her. I wonder too if just in that time frame they had trouble drawing, like, even the dudes. I mean, you look at Man at Arms and shave him and give him a tan, he looks a lot like He-Man. It's like a lot of those character designs weren't vastly different unless you were like a monkey dude with a goatee, but well, goggles.
You've seen some of those documentaries behind the scene when you guys interviewed one of the animators.
Yeah, Tom Cook.
Well,
Tom Cook,
that they were on at Filmation was like ridiculous.
Oh, bonkers.
So they were just anything to save a half
time.
A second.
Go, exactly. Go, go. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, they did share a similar look. I mean, if you look at, like, put them side by side, Sorceress Teela, She-Ra, Marlena. I mean, they have a very similar look in a lot of ways.
You're right.
You know, I think Teela kind of had that almost classic kind of redhead sort of look, almost like a Scully.
Lucille Ball.
You know, but yeah, they did share a similar look for sure.
Right. It's a good segue. Speaking of redheads.
Uh-oh.
Red Sonja.
See, the Battle of the Redheads.
Battle of the Red. Redhead Ruckus.
Redhead Ruckus. Man.
If it alliterates, it's true.
That's true. No arguments.
That's funny.
Well, Red Sonja was created by Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith for Marvel Comics in 1973, but they were loosely based upon a 1934 story by Robert Howard, who created Conan. So that's where they got their idea from, was reading some of his old stories. And she's known as the She-Devil with a sword.
Yeah.
So the way her story is based on the 1973 comic book in Marvel is that Red Sonja lived in a Western country, and she was only 17, and some mercenaries showed up to take over the village and rape and pillage, and she was assaulted by the invaders. And so one of the deals that she made with the Red Goddess that showed up.
Yes.
So shows up and says, look, I'll give you some powers, superpowers, so to speak. But the condition is, if you ever get bested by a fighter, then that's when you're going to lose your power. So that's kind of where that came from. And so, of course, she enters the Conan world, and that's where she kind of gets her powers. And she's a warrior that works along with, sometimes with Conan, but we get to see them duke it out sometimes as well. But all the fights between Conan and Red Sonja end in a draw. So she's good enough that even Conan can't best her in a fight, which I thought was kind of interesting that she got these powers from this Red Goddess. I don't know what they never really say. The name of the goddess is Skathach.
Yeah,
I never could find anything about never could find out what the Red Goddess of Skathach is, but gives her good fighting ability. Then, okay, another thing is she can never sleep with a man or be defeated by a man, otherwise she loses her power. So
if she
has sex with a dude, she's going to lose her powers.
Correct.
So she is like, what's the word now? Celibate.
Yes.
Didn't they play on that in the movie too?
Yes. So they have the big. Which
I haven't seen
this
since I was a teenager.
So they'd always duel. Her and Conan would duel to a draw. But again, they did work together occasionally. Now they did reboot it in Dynamite Comics in 2005, and then Gail Simone rebooted it again in 2013. In both those iterations, they don't have the goddess incarnation of where she gets her power. She's just a strong warrior.
Yeah, she's a self-made woman in the latest Dynamite Comics now.
Yeah.
She had a rough early life, and now she's just BA because of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think in the reboot in 2005, they actually had the original Red Sonja die, and then she's reincarnated into a new body, and then they kind of wiped away that
the
past
old
of being assaulted by the villagers and getting that power from a goddess. So she's self-made. I think she was in gladiator fights is where she got her training for that, which I thought was interesting.
I get why they did that. I'm sad that there's not like a otherworldly component to it either.
Yeah,
I don't don't know why.
Magical.
I kind of like that.
You're in trouble. So that's the thing. She was comforting Red Sonja because she just lost her family and been raped. And so she comes along and said, you know what? I'm going to help you get revenge on those men.
I mean, I know why they did it. I mean, in the 1970s property, she's a product of kind of that exploitive 1970s thing, like, hey, we're going to have a woman run around in a chainmail bikini and she's going to be the forbidden fruit because she can't be with a man unless, you know, he bests her in battle. And these are all like tropes that just society has moved on from. So they've been like, no, she's now a you know, self-made woman. She doesn't need a goddess. And she doesn't need this celibacy, you know, the celibacy vow is like, that's gone as well in the later reincarnation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Conan had some, or not Conan, Robert Howard had another character called Belit, was just basically a similar version of Red Sonja. So he really seemed to like the strong female warrior, especially being written back in 1934, to put that those types of characters in. Those are the two I know of. He may have had some other.
Yeah, Valyria was the other.
Valyria, yeah. Right? Yeah.
For Conan, it's Valyria and Belit were the two strong females. And then Red Sonja actually was never in a Conan story.
That's right, yeah.
Her story was written by Robert E. Howard, same author, but it was like she was set in like 16th century Portugal or something like that.
It was called Red Sonja of Ragatino, a female swashbuckler, and then also on a character called Dark Agnes of Dashtalon was the other character. But yeah, you're right, both 15th, 16th century. One was in Turkey, one was in France.
Yeah.
And that's where...
Super close, Portugal.
Yeah.
Same. Super close.
Almost.
But that's where they got the Barry and Roy came up with that idea. But speaking of chainmail bikini, that's the thing with her character. She didn't start out that way, but that's how they started drawing her. And I did some research on it. And it was artist Esteban Morato was the first to draw Red Sonja with her chainmail bikini. And then John Buscema picked up on it as well. And then Boris, maybe you'll know this, how to pronounce it, Boris Vallejo.
Vallejo,
there we go.
Yeah.
Was another one that kind of helped proliferate it. That was interesting. That's not what she started out in. She came in what's called the Shadow of the Vulture, Conan number 23, 1973. But now I'll put the pictures on the show notes. She is also very smart, and she doesn't appear with the chainmail bikini in the first one. That was something that was added later. But
what a great cover, though. Look at this.
Yeah. Very colorful. But the thing is, Conan is going to the city, running away from some other warriors, but she knows that he's coming, or knows that these attackers are coming, and so she's already planned a strategy and lets Conan in, and they both end up taking out the invaders together, so they work together and take them out.
I love how it says, freely adapted from the story of Robert E. Howard.
Yes.
Meaning how? We didn't pay him anything.
Right.
Good artist borrow, great artist steal.
Yeah. Exactly.
We can move to the movie, which came out. I thought this was interesting. Came out in 1985. And the Red Sonja poster, again, I'll have it in the show notes. But what do you guys notice about the poster for the Red Sonja movie?
She's gorgeous. Okay. That and Conan is huge.
Yep. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bridget Nielsen are both in it. But you can see Conan.
Looks like a Conan movie.
Yeah, Arnold, right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, I was always really confused in that because it really felt like it was a heavy Conan movie. Mm-hmm. But I was like, why is it called Red Sonja?
That's just it.
He seems like the main character.
Right. Well, it even gets deeper. The villain in Red Sonja is played by Sandahl Bergman, and she was Conan's love interest in the Conan the Barbarian movie. So there's like multiple characters that are like been recast, and you're like, I'm so confused. Why is Conan going by Kalidor?
Is he playing Conan in this?
No. They couldn't get the intellectual property right, so they renamed him Kalidor.
Okay.
But other than that, he's Conan.
But he was Conan.
Yeah.
Conan.
My nickname's Kalidor.
So funny.
Kind of the story behind that is the director for that. Arnold was only supposed to be in a few minutes of the movie, six minutes, but they kept him on set for a week and then 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. And all of a sudden the movie comes out and he's in almost the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so Arnold was not too happy with the director because that's not what he agreed to. And I guess they ended the contract with that director.
So, oh, nope. Wow.
Or yeah, with Dino De Laurentiis, same guy that did like Flash Gordon, Conan the Barbarian. Yeah. Like Arnold was on like a 10 movie contract or something, and Arnold's like, nope, you just, you know, duped me. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he broke off with.
Wow.
That was so like par for the course back then.
Yeah.
I mean, not to derail too bad, but you look up anything with the original Superman movie, Saul Kinds, those producers. I mean, it's just shy of like mafia level deception and backroom deals. And it's just ugly. It's just so funny. And I know now it's probably always that way, but it just seems so much more like.
In the 70s and 80s. I think the contracts got a lot stronger.
Cigar chomping, you know, business guys in a dirty room. Anyway, But yeah, so it's a Red Sonja movie, but Arnold is like eating up 50% of the real estate on this poster.
But they have, just like Jeff said, the battle. They're going to try to fight each other, and they just end up in a duel exhausted. So it kind of goes to that point.
And it has Brigitte Nielsen.
Yep.
Yes.
This is a hole in my cinema game. I got to watch this sucker.
Well, I had to insult to injury that Maria Shriver, his wife, said that if this movie doesn't kill your career, Arnold, nothing will. After watching this.
Well, there you go.
See, I thought it was a good movie, but again, I'm remembering from like a...
I thought it was fine, but I'm like, cool, Arnold's in it, and it's a slasher sword fantasy movie.
Barbarian,
like, of course.
And then he read the script for Jingle All the Way and was like, hold my beer.
That's hilarious.
Oh my gosh. So that's all I got on Red Sonja.
One other thing I had in the Red Sonja movies, they couldn't resist the urge. As an 80s movie, they had to add like an Asian kid sidekick.
Oh no, are you serious?
That's
like,
right.
There's an 8-year-old like Asian kid in there that knows kung fu, and he's this loud, obnoxious like sidekick. Actually, I think he's a prince or something.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
Red Sonja has to guard him.
He's all yelling all the time.
So annoying.
Like, people love Short Round. We have to.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
Lord.
The Goonies.
Yeah.
You know, they love all
those. Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
the worst.
It is funny. And it did.
Hey, on that note, good segue.
All right. Well, one thing on the box office, I was going to mention that it only made $7 million at the box office, and the budget was $18 million.
Ooh,
and it was released on the same day as Back to the Future.
Oh, yikes.
That doesn't help.
That doesn't help at all. I bet $18 million probably. Well, Arnold wasn't. I mean, he's huge, but not probably that big. He probably got a big chunk of that.
I bet he did.
People saw that it wasn't a Conan movie, and they were like, what is this? And then they got Back to the Future. I mean,
you're done.
Yeah. So then, does this when we match them up, or do we wait till the end, or what do we? Now they fight.
Should we go with why we think Red Sonja should win first?
Sure.
Since they gave their background first. So I've got a couple of reasons why Tila's going down here. So here we go.
Please, indulge us.
As previously mentioned in some of the comics, Tila needed saving. So I'm going with that version of Tila. You guys go with the Tila you want.
Yes.
But you also mentioned that Tila became the captain of the guard.
Yeah.
And second only to Duncan.
Right.
Clearly, this is a position of nepotism. She only got the job because her father.
Yeah.
Her father was in a position of power.
Sure, I see what you're doing. I see what you're cooking.
If she were just somebody else, would she have been the captain of the guard?
Yeah.
And
then
you also clearly mentioned that in the cartoon, you rarely ever see her doing any captain of the guard duties.
Sure.
She just babysits Adam and like yells at him. I think it's like in a name only kind of position where she's like, yeah, sure, Tila, you're the captain of the guard. Now go keep Adam out of trouble.
There it is. She's Adam's babysitter.
Yeah. Go wash his pink shirt.
Yeah.
Could be
uphill,
but I will say though, in the actual storyline,
as a counter,
that she was in battle, and then they took her away from battle to protect Adam. So
it would be nepotism if she was bad at the job.
Right.
So it's like if she was a bad captain of the guard, then I would probably be more like, yeah, she has the job because she's clearly his daughter. But she also was, roundhouse kicking people.
True.
Across
true.
That, so.
That's right.
However, so when she's training, if they all know Duncan's her dad, maybe they hold back a little bit because they don't want their arms replaced with kitchen utensils. Or
that's true. It's like, guys, don't make Duncan mad. You're gonna
wake up with something different on your arms.
Yeah, I mean, there are masters of the universe. There's literally dozens of other fantastic warriors there. But surprise, surprise, Tila got the job as captain of the guard.
And I mean, the struggle we have here is like there's probably arguably four different versions of Tila.
Right.
And Jeff and I are invoking the goddess version. Right.
Who led an army of snake men, like zombie monsters that... eventually killed Duncan and turned him into a Snake Man too. So
that's right. They turned him,
so you want to talk about nepotism?
And they had a fleet of dragon walkers.
That's
true.
If
you're going to pick machines to go with you, you're going to get dragon walkers. Is that
the worst decision ever? That's like going into battle with a bunch of big wheels.
We'll be there in a minute.
Why are they so slow?
I mean, you have the essentially a female barbarian. So are you going with the non-god enhanced Red Sonja, or are you going for the...
We're going to go with the origin, so we're going to go enhanced.
Oh, yeah.
That's so then, close.
Yeah. So our argument is that clearly Teela being a goddess in this regard, we're going with the green the green Teela on this one. It's probably... I can feel like Lee's going to call us out as cheating.
No, it's all good. We invoke the goddess as well. So.
That's true. I guess my counter to this is that you're dealing with a woman who's not only seen battle as a mortal, but she's also seen battle as a goddess. So she's got like both strategies at play. She roundhouse kicks all day long. And she can find a sleeping prince that's trying to hide and take a nap. So she's got a lot of skill sets.
And anybody that can like deal with Orko every day.
Yeah. Who doesn't kill him with her bare hands. She's got patience for days.
That's right.
True. Well, you're finding a sleeping prince thing segues into my third and final cherry on the top point as to why Red Sonja wins this battle.
Hit us.
So Red Sonja, like even the early incarnations up to the current ones, she's not only a great warrior, but she's often depicted as very cunning, very shrewd. Like she, you know, manipulates, tricks people, outwits them, outbattles them. So she's the whole package, right?
She's a step ahead.
Whereas Teela is like, if He-Man puts on a pink shirt and tights, she's tricked. Like, she has no idea who that dude
is. Has us on this
She's
one.
Clearly that not is. Working on the same intellectual level as
Red Every Sonja. Iteration of Teela has not caught on.
That's true.
Arguably, the goddess of Teela knows the jig is up.
Yeah.
But every other version of Teela was fooled by some tan in a bottle.
and some pink lycra.
Some pink lycra.
So that's one hit I'll give you. Her stealth
but
and her
voices were a little bit different too. I mean,
Hey Teela.
Different guy.
Totally.
Different.
He was just a big fan of He-Man. That's all it was.
I would say Red Sonja definitely has the like the tracking breeze. And ability to like detect a deception way better than Teela, because Teela was fooled for decades. Apparently. As far as combat goes, I mean, you're dealing with someone who's gone to war several times with, like, and I'm only imagining in the world of Conan and Red Sonja, which I'm sadly ignorant to, I'm sure they fought demons and monsters too. So they're both fighting like bonkers creatures from hell.
But Teela's the only one who's ever fought masters of the universe.
They were masters of the universe.
Won.
Instead of fighting like mud blups from
giant spiders and.
That was my nickname in college.
That was your nickname in college. Mud Blups. Come on. Where's Mud Blups at? Get him. So I think battle-wise overall, I'm going to get some fire for that. I think Teela has more overall battle experience when you take into the fact that she's had two incarnations of herself that has seen battle. And she has fought masters.
True. I am reading Dynamite's latest, I think it's volume 5 of their Red Sonja, and it's actually really good. Mm-hmm. It just started coming, they're on issue like 5 or 6 now, just started it this year, but it's like an older Red Sonja, and she's actually the queen of Hycanian.
Hycanian, yep.
Yeah, the country she's from. And she's leading armies and like fighting off like the Zamorian army. And again, she's very shrewd and she's a great tactician and is actually really well written. I'd recommend it to anybody.
I'll add here too, she has so much luck on her side, because anybody that can wear a chainmail bikini and never get hit by an arrow or a sword has got to have something behind them.
I'm glad you've invoked the chainmail bikini, because that was going to be my counter too, is like just overall battle preparedness. I feel like even though Teela isn't much more than a bikini, she's got the one piece.
She's wearing a swimsuit.
And depending on, once again, if we're talking goddess Teela, she's got that snake armor.
Yeah.
It's armor made of snakes.
She glows in the dark.
Oh, she does glow in the dark.
Ooh, yeah. So,
do you have the goddess figure?
It makes her way easier to hit if they fight at night.
That's true. That's
it's
true.
A night battle.
That's true. You do scare some of your other people though too. They'll soil themselves. She's green. It's even happening now.
That's right.
Run away.
This is kind of a, this is a toughie because we're dealing with two very powerful.
This is what I'm saying. So that was the other thing I should mention about that poll is that it was only won by 0.1%.
Really? Whoa,
did it go to red zone? So you rarely ever see it going into like points or whatever. It's like,
really?
It's like 47 to 53%. This was 50.1 to 49.9.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
In Tila's favor.
In Tila's favor.
Wow.
Wow.
On a Motu website. Surprise, surprise.
No, it went to
hey, we've had some non-Motu characters win those polls.
Yeah.
You were like, man, for a Motu site, people aren't picking Motu characters.
Yeah.
As mega guys, I feel like we're going to put our foot down a little bit. I think Tila wins this one. I think she does. I think she's got magic. I think she's fought masters. I think she's got some better armor. And the only weakness she really has is the fact that she can be easily fooled. But now the... So it's like...
That seems like a pretty big weakness.
It is. I'm not going to lie. But now that she knows, she's like, never again.
So if Red Sonja just puts on pink lycra,
if she dresses up as Prince Adam, she can't even see her.
Oh, no.
Changes her voice.
Who is this?
Who are you?
She put on like a little page boy wig and then walked by.
Stabbed her. Oonk. Fight over.
That might be the strategy on how Red Sonja can beat her.
She's an excellent tactician. You know,
but I mean, Red Sonja, like, how does she not gotten at least like one stab, but not once? You
not
know?
Once.
She must be a heck of a warrior, wear a chainmail bikini and not a single scar.
Not even a scratch.
Nope.
Or
does she get injured at all in the storyline?
Oh, I think she does.
Or is all the men just like completely like, I don't want to swing at that. That's gorgeous.
I can't ruin that beautiful body.
And then she's like, cuts them all up.
That's life too. That's marriage right there.
I don't want to yell at her. She's gorgeous.
She's so pretty. Why is she stabbing me?
That's right.
She's laughing. Yeah. No, I think we're saying she wins. Do you guys concede or do you see?
If it's the original Tila.
Oh,
the cartoon one. I think Red Sonja wins hands down.
Well, I have to agree with that one. Probably,
I would agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight that one. Comic or cartoon, Tila gets destroyed by
but
Red Sonja.
The Eternity War Tila.
Eternity
Green
War
Goddess.
Tila. Yeah. I would almost say 2002 version Tila. It might be close.
Yeah.
Or do they just maybe we just stop this and they just come together and go kick butt together?
Didn't we do that with one of those already?
We did.
Then they're friends.
That would be a great crossover, though.
That would be.
That's a comic I would read, like a Tila Red Sonja.
That's
Dynamite. Hear us.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe this is the draw.
It's DC now with He-Man.
DC has He-Man and Dynamite.
Because they've vacillated back and forth.
Does
DC own Dynamite?
No, I'm just
saying that Dynamite owns Red Sonja and DC owns Tila.
So you can do a crossover.
So it would have to be a cross.
Yeah. Six issue crossover.
Because for a while, Marvel had He-Man in the beginning.
And then
Image had it for a while, too.
Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm.
But, Come on, Mattel, quit doing that.
We just want money.
I guess we're going to walk away saying that depending on the version, Tila comes away winner or Red Sonja.
So it's almost a 50-50 because there's like four versions of Tila.
I'm version five of Red Sonja.
Yeah.
So Dynamite.
But her origin arguably is still more or less unchanged, right?
No, they changed her origin. Like I said, it was the goddess, but now she's like a self-made woman that just had like made herself a badass.
There's
warrior.
No superpowers here. It's just pure talent and training.
Yep.
And shrewd intellect.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we're going to call it that. It's probably still a draw.
We'll let the listener draw.
Listener
vote.
You decide.
Go back to the mega site, revote again.
Who do you think would win in that fight? We should put a new poll up.
We could.
Yeah, we could. Put the goddess Tila picture up.
That's right. And then we'll do like the picture of Red Sonja like as a waitress.
Oh, no.
Who would win?
Are we ready for round two.
So we'll go first this one then since you guys went first on that
one. What's our matchup?
And matchup is Titus on the mega side.
That's good.
And Apache Chief on our side. So Apache Chief is the Native American hero from the Super Friends. And he came out and several other characters from that time period came out in 1977 because the folks that did Super Friends were a little concerned that there was all just basically a bunch of white guys on the team. And so they came out with a gallery of
there were. It was literally all white people.
And Wonder Woman.
We're diverse.
White guys and Wonder Woman.
Yep. Wonder Woman. Yes. So they came out with these four characters, and one of them was Apache Chief, who is a Native American man who got, and I'll include in the show notes a link to the YouTube video of the hilarious origins of Apache Chief. So indicative of that time. But he was out with one of his other tribesmen, I guess. He was a medicine man, I believe, and a bear attacks, and he sprinkles this magic powder on him, and as soon as Apache Chief says, Inukjuk, and you got to say it really loud. Jeff can probably do it better.
Do it!
Inukjuk!
There we go.
Nailed it.
Nailed Perfect. It. Says the magic word, which is, I guess, Apache for big man, or some other language means big man, and he grows into a 50-foot man with exponential strength that goes along with it, and it also enhances his senses. So if he's courageous and he grows, his courage gets bigger too as well. And also, as we find out, his clothes too. His clothes grow with him.
His clothes go with him. Yeah, I know.
Thank goodness. That would be scary.
sprinkle not, his magic dust on his clothes.
Not to interject this, but and you'll probably put this in your show notes too, I imagine. In their attempt to become more diverse, not only was there Apache Chief, but there were these other three guys.
Yes.
But the thing that, and you'll name them off, I guess, but the thing that I'd so crazy about the time is that, and this is where, like, you got to admire the people's heart being in the right place, but like,
yeah,
they made their ethnicity part of their superhero name.
Right.
We go ahead and tackle that. I know Lee and I kind of talked about it. I give him kudos for trying.
Yeah.
You know, especially 1977. I mean, this isn't that long after the civil rights movement and
I get
all
it.
That.
You so, know,
apparently, I mean, they should have just been like, and here's Taco and here, you know,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's so weird. Yeah,
inclusion in 1977 apparently meant taking a racial stereotype and like just
exactly.
like blowing it up.
Yes. Going, yeah, literally.
Yeah. Give an A for the effort, but execution, maybe not so much.
I mean, even the Asian one is named Samurai. Yeah. They didn't even try on that one.
Right. So we've got, to name him, it's Black Vulcan, Samurai, and El Dorado. So we've got Apache Chief with the Native Americans. Black Vulcan was African American. Samurai is Asian, and El Dorado is Hispanic. And they, yeah, like you said, they leaned really heavy into the ethnicities. Big time.
I just love the other picture that you have of the super friends because like all the white people are like, this is
except
us.
For there is the Adam is up there for some reason.
Right. Yeah, I don't know why.
With all the other like the non-white
but
people.
But he's got the look of like, why am I up here? But then the other guys, they're just like, seriously? they just have so much disgust
like
on
Black
their
Lightning
face.
Wants to punch Adam in the mouth right now.
Yeah, like all of them, they're just
you
like, don't, ugh.
You should go hang out with your friends. But the thing is, like you said, coming back around, like all kidding aside, it's cool they did it.
Yeah.
But it's also like ham-fisted. It's just,
right.
You know, and you know they were voiced by like all white people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Did Black Lightning get a voice in the Super Friends? Mm-hmm. Was he voiced by a white man?
I don't know. That's a good question. I should look into that.
I would die. I would laugh so hard. My spirit would leave my body.
Because I think Apache Chief was voiced by the same guy that did Green Lantern.
Yes.
If I recall.
Same guy that did Green Lantern. Yeah. Yep. Was the same voice.
Yeah. It is funny how sensibilities over time change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
For the better.
Yeah, for the better.
They did other versions.
Keep changing, please.
Yes. He was in 25 episodes from 77 to 84. I mean, they also did different iterations of him in Justice League Unlimited, which came out, I think it was 2004, I believe. Mm-hmm. He was Long Shadow, and they didn't lean so heavily on the Native American aspect of him. He was a clone that Cadmus had made, and so his struggle was, am I really human or am I clone? And really didn't talk much about it. In fact, he didn't use the magic word. He just would put his fist together and then get really big.
Yeah.
And then they had him, a young version of him, in the Young Justice version, Young Justice cartoon series, and that they have him there as a young boy. He does look a lot more like the original Apache Chief, which we should describe his look. So he's got the red headband from the original red headband. He wears kind of a brown coat, or not coat,
vest,
and then he has the loincloth, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, with them cloth or like leather boots.
And some wristbands.
He could almost be a He-Man character.
You're right.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
He's missing the fur diaper, but that's about the extent of it.
He's got just the loincloth instead of the fur diaper.
We almost need to sneak him into the next. Or at least like, no, don't make me draw Apache.
More Apache Chief stuff. But he didn't really have anything else other than the Super Friends, because these brief appearances in the comic book and DC 1 Million. Mm-hmm. He was briefly in there, but he is parodied in lots of other shows, so you can find him out on YouTube. You can find lots of different parodies where they do it.
I think Robot Chicken did a thing.
Robot
too,
Chicken did
making fun of how like that was their inclusion effort.
Yes. And
I'll be honest, I remember of all of the non-traditional or you know the classic lineup of Super Friends, Apache Chief was one of my favorites.
Yes,
because he grew so big.
Yes. Yeah.
And he looked like a dude who just wasn't putting up with much fuss. Like
wasn't a lot of humor.
No, he was about like you know getting stuff done. Or not mess. And I liked how crazy his powers were.
Yeah.
So as a kid, once again, your brain's not there. You're just like, he's cool because he gets big and he's strong. So as a kid, and even I just like him. I like his profile picture. He's like,
who didn't when they were 8 years old?
Right.
Say, neck chuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Stomping on stuff.
Oh,
your
dude.
Mom's like, what are you doing?
Stop it.
Why are you wearing a loincloth?
I'm a Native American. I hate Superman.
One story though, the storyline that they did. He wasn't just limited to 50 feet. In one storyline, this space colossus comes to Earth and the planet gets stuck in his beard. That's how big he was.
Yeah.
And so Apache Chief grows really big and takes out the space colossus.
He grows. He's as big as a galaxy.
Yes.
He gets bigger than the planet.
He puts the Earth in a jar after it lands in his beard.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I wonder which version these guys are going to go with.
I don't know.
When we try to fight.
So this is why I was digging my heels in the ground so hard with Tila, because we knew what was coming.
Yeah, I know.
Eddie and Jeff, you both have beards. Have you had a planet stuck in your beard?
Yes.
I mean, if you want to get into quantum theory, then there's planets in our beards right now.
No, that could be.
Lee's too.
Deep. That's right. All right, so that's all I have on Apache Chief.
Yeah. Well, before we roll on, I will say I did some research.
Uh-oh.
So I wanted to talk about the Black Vulcan really quick.
He
was actually voiced by an African-American.
Well done, DC.
Nice. He was voiced by Buster Jones, who was also the voice for Blaster in Transformers.
Oh, nice.
And then he was also the voice for Winston in the Ghostbusters.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, he only got like black characters to voice. The 80s were trying, I guess.
We got to put a black guy in this cartoon. Call it Buster. He's not doing nothing.
Well, the funny thing is with Black Vulcan, he was the only one out of those four, as far as I know, that did much anything else, because they have the Black Lightning TV show on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And as far as they know, never seen an Apache Chief or El Dorado or Samurai show.
Yeah.
They did some cameo. El Dorado did some cameo appearances in the new Wonder Twins comic book. He's in the background that I've seen. But Black Lightning or Black Vulcan, whatever, is the only one that kind of moved on.
I feel like, you know, it's easy for us to kind of have these kinds of talks as four white dudes around the table. I would love, and it's funny because I've been meaning to reach out to this podcast, and I just been, you know, everybody who follows us, what we're doing as our separate entities or even as our groups, we're all pretty busy people.
Yeah.
I mean, in our personal lives, professional lives, and then in our side hustles that we're all doing. But the point I'm getting at is there's a podcast here in town called Capes and Afros, and it's the hosts and the creators are black women who are super fans of like nerd stuff.
Nice. And they are fantastic.
Yeah, and they're funny.
Look them up. Their show is awesome.
Yeah. And I would love to sit down just to have a round table to be like, hey, listen, I want to dive into this.
Yeah,
I know, you know, because I think we could learn a lot. I think it'd be fun. But that's my question is like, with a show like Black Lightning now, there's literally a Netflix show called Black Lightning that's you know, a DC superhero.
Yeah.
He's a black dude. I wonder if you could still get away with that with other minority groups, you know, like could you literally do a show called Apache Chief?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know, or would that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I kind of, and not that black women could speak for Native Americans, but I'm just curious in general what people other than us think about that kind of thing.
I know.
You know, they look at Black Lightning and they're like, that's awesome. Or they're like, a little off key or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, I think it'd be fun to get that perspective.
Well, next time we'll have our nerd death match. It'll be samurai versus jitsu. We'll see which is worse.
And the internet explodes. People are outside our houses, like.
Or there were Black Vulcan versus Clamp Champ.
There you go.
Yeah, it's so funny because you don't think about those things as you know, when you are literally a white kid. You don't.
Yeah,
think
you're
about,
7 years old.
You don't think about that. You're just like, oh, it's cool. And then you think about it.
Makes sense. He's Asian and he's probably a karate expert.
But then as you get older and you meet different people and your life experience changes and you meet that you know, you have a friend who's Asian who's like, yeah, that was really messed up.
Right.
There was only one guy and his whole identity was wrapped up in his ethnicity.
I thought the exact exact same thing. I'm an 8-year-old kid living in western Nebraska on a farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is cool. Look at it. You can grow big and yeah. you can track stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't.
Well, your perspective is different even now. I mean, you've got children that are adopted that aren't white kids. Exactly. So even now, you're probably dealing with some of that in a way. Like, you're learning as you get, as they get older and stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Funny life informing everything.
How about Titus, guys?
Oh, my goodness. Did Lee get his bits in? I don't want to have to get...
I got my bits, and I'm saving the rest of my ammo for the fight.
I'm scared. I'm scared. So, Titus was... we'll get into this, because he was never featured in the cartoon.
No.
Never featured in the live-action movie. Never featured in one of the mainstream comics, I don't even think.
He was only featured in... As far as comics, he's featured in the UK comics.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he wasn't really featured in any story. He just was like, here's a toy.
Yeah.
And he's really big. And
they gave a backstory on the box.
They gave a backstory on the classics.
When they came out with the classics line, they did their own little mini version. Yes. I think he was in those.
Correct. Right.
He was, yep.
Yeah. He had his own little comic with that. But other than that, I mean, there's not a whole lot going in with Titus.
You kind of had to wait till like 2014 to figure out what he was. Otherwise, we just kind of knew him as like the... We almost went to full Barbie doll mode in Motu.
Well, you know? It's so funny because like as a kid, I didn't even know Titus was a thing, right?
Right.
I remember the dinosaurs.
I remember Titus as a kid, but it was... Mm-hmm. I think we saw a commercial for it.
I know. I remember I saw a commercial for Turbodactyl.
Turbodactyl.
And I was like, remember Turbodactyl? And I was like, I want that. Right. He's got jets under his wings. He's got turbines.
I remember something with the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Titus, and maybe it was an ad or a commercial or something like that. And it was like a coming soon.
Yeah.
And he never obviously made it to the U.S. He was only made in the U.K. And so it's funny because if you go over to the U.K., they sell them for like literally like $100 of American dollars over there.
Yeah.
But then if they sell them to Americans, they're like $1,500 to $2,500 over here.
Okay.
Wow. You know.
The original ones.
The original.
Yeah, yeah. You could buy a Titus, not like the classics Titus, for like $45.
$45, yeah.
That's crazy.
And he's way cooler.
Very cool. Way cooler. Well, yeah, I mean, the classics is, you know, people go after the original.
Oh, gosh, yeah. He's a holy grail.
My memory of just knowing where they were going. So he was part of the Powers of Grayskull.
Yes.
Relaunch, essentially, of He-Man. And I remember seeing a commercial where there was this Brontosaurus. Remember this thing?
Yes.
And a kid was playing with it, and they were like, look out! And he, like, rotated its tail or something, and, like, a compartment on its side pops open, and Man-at-Arms is inside a gun turret, and like, ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga, and I'm sitting here like, what? Like, my kid brain couldn't handle it anymore.
You have to imagine, too, it was the size of a Volkswagen. I mean, the thing was enormous. It was like they had like a deal with like so much plastic that they're like, we're running out of our deal. We have to get rid of this plastic. Here, form the biggest dinosaur you can
make,
think
a Brontosaurus,
dump it in there.
Exactly.
Awesome. Oh man.
So this thing was nuts, and the whole idea was that there was this like magical enchantment that happened that combined technology with the monsters of Eternia or whatever.
Correct.
And so that was the plan for Mattel, was to kind of go backwards, and they were going to feature Hero instead of He-Man, who was the most powerful wizard in the universe, and he had his staff that opened
up with
a magical
pre-Eternia.
And then within this world was going to be occupied also giants, and not just in classic Masters of the Universe. They didn't just have one giant. They had to have, you know, one good one and one bad one, because they got to have that yin yang thing. Mm-hmm. And so you had the bad giant, which was Megator. Thank you. Yep. Megator. And then you had Titus. And Titus essentially was like a big He-Man.
Correct.
That's what he looked like.
That's what everybody thought it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And they spelled it with a Y.
T-Y-T-U-S. Yeah.
Really,
which was kind of neat. Like, Wild Stallion. But like Jeff was getting at, like my initial, just seeing pictures of him, I was like, ew, he's got Barbie hair. You know, that was my first thought as a little boy.
Me too. I was like, does he come with a brush?
You got to comb his hair, dog.
It's like, difference
between an action figure and a doll.
I think it's its hair.
If you can brush its hair.
That's right.
Yep. And he had this bonkers weapon that we lovingly nicknamed.
Yes, talk about that.
Called the Booper.
And it looks like basically a giant coffee cup or a mug with a long handle on it that he basically puts on top of like the regular sized figures.
Yeah, like upside down coffee
cup. Yeah, upside down. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you're a street magician, you know, hiding a ball. And he just puts it on top of like a regular sized figure's head. And underneath that cup, it has like what looks like kind of almost like a clover shape.
Right.
That basically is meant to capture the figure's head. And he just picks them up by their head.
That's right.
By the way.
He's like, you're mine now.
That would hurt.
Yeah, it's like,
boop. You'd be screaming the whole time. You saw a crane come down and just pick you up by your head. Just feet just kicking.
You look like the dude from the super glue commercial.
Exactly. You know, like, his legs just flying. And that was his way of like capturing people. So the weapon looked cool, but also lame at the same time. Right. It was the weirdest looking thing.
Like, what it should have just been a hammer that just crushed them, you know, but instead it was like, I'm going to catch you by your head. I don't know.
That thing could be brutal. If you pick up someone by their head and then just like shook it violently,
that's true.
That head's coming off.
Oh, yeah.
It's got like a little thing from like an ice cream scooper.
Just a little thumb button on it.
Pops the head off. That's pretty brutal.
It's like a cigar cutter. It's a cigar
cutter. He's got a little pouch on his waist. Just stick that head in there. Move on. Next. Boop.
Did they have an official name?
We just deemed it the Booper.
We called it the Booper. I'm sure it's called...
It probably is something.
It's called something weird. Scoop-or.
Yeah. Scoop-or.
So the idea was that He-Man was going to get transported back in time. This is the actual canon. And it never actually took hold. But he was going to get transported back in time and basically have to chase Skeletor through time, and one of the places he was going to be was pre-Eternia, and so that's where King Hiss and all this kind of comes into play too. You see the original bad guys and they bring in the snake men, so Titus was one of the giants and he was on the side of good and he had a giant G on his chest for Grayskull.
Oh, for Titus? Oh no.
Exactly.
So confused.
I know and he had the G and the G on his breastplate for Grayskull, so he was like a protector of Grayskull. The idea also was that he helped build Castle Grayskull. Ooh, that was part of the original.
Okay.
Because he was buddies with King Grayskull. King Grayskull.
Right.
Correct.
Right. And King Grayskull was even like kind of created later on down the line too. I don't think he was part of the... Who knows what they were thinking? I don't think he was part of the original Powers of Grayskull line.
Because this is all released in Europe then, right?
Italy, Britain...
Germany, I think.
Germany, a few other places like that. They got more of the giants than America did. America got a few, but not a lot. Those dinosaurs came out about the same time. From my understanding, that Brontosaurus never actually got made. There was a prototype.
Correct. Really?
Yeah, wow. There was a prototype, maybe a handful, like, you know, whatever, but they were never, like, on the market. But there was Turbodactyl.
Right.
And, so Titus, now, he's a finite size. Like, he can't just... keep growing.
Yeah, there's
he
no sprinkling.
He doesn't say. He doesn't say Chuck Norris or whatever he does.
Chuck Norris comes out.
You know, he comes out and dives through Apache Chief. Comes out his heart.
Oh my gosh!
Like aliens.
Oh man,
that's what would happen.
But there's no magic words. There's no nothing, and he doesn't have any powers. He has killer boots, though. Boots are to die for.
If you look up, and the Booper.
Booper. Just got it up on the screen there. If you look
he had
at
like
those
metal boots.
Those boots were something else. And that G, right? I think he has a G on the boots, too.
I love his headgear. He's got this little thing over his nose.
He has an interesting... Like, he doesn't wear a helmet because
he's like a Fabio. Like, don't crush my nose.
Don't mess the hair. Yeah, he has the...
Like that goose flew into his face. Broke Fabio's nose.
Did you guys know that? Yeah. Poor Fobs.
Poor Fabio.
But he has that weird... It's kind of like a What's that word for the head? Is it not singlet? That's what they wear on Star Trek. Whatever. He has a crown and it's inverted where it covers his nose bridge, ostensibly to protect him from getting his nose broken. But by who? Probably Megator.
Megator.
Keep in mind they came from the land of giants.
That's
so there's lots and lots of giants where he comes from. So.
And that's classic, like 1983 Mattel too, is because they evoke a larger thing that they're not prepared to quite populate yet. They're like, we'll make one figure. We'll say he's from a land of of Giants, and if he sells well, we'll make more Giants.
Right.
I'm sure that was probably their thought, but super strong, best friends with besties of King Grayskull, which that's the guy to be friends with.
Correct.
Who does have magical powers, or at least access to them.
I love that they put Grayskull on like his little shirt thing. Yeah, or
isn't that great?
Like I'm gonna go get a shirt with an E on it for Eddie.
I know. Right. We have different shirts.
He's my friend.
I have a J on mine. Another one with an L.
And, besties.
What's that for? What's the J for? It's for Jeff.
Yeah. That's right.
But your name's Eddie. I know, he's my friend.
He's my friend.
Okay. It's Titus logic.
It's Titus logic.
Titus logic.
That's great.
But
we do have to say, though, in the Great War, Titus died.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Titus got killed in the Great War.
He killed Megator.
Yep, they both died.
But he also died defeating him.
His wounds.
So,
which if you see Megator,
so I wonder who's going to win this one.
Well, I mean, just because he's currently dead. That's, oh, you mean like if he's not dead?
That's right.
I thought you meant who's a ghost.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're gonna use that one.
He's a ghost. He can possess the Apache chief, make him punch himself.
I got it, Titus.
I gotta ask you guys, how bad did you want all of this?
Knowing,
Preternia, big time.
I wasn't a fan of the real doll hair, and I was a smart enough kid to know that my battle to get the castle was hard enough. Right. You have a figure the size of the castle. My parents aren't just going to say okay to that, you know. So, but I really liked those dinosaurs.
Just
so
the whole concept.
Oh, the concept was
so much
magic.
Better than the way that they went. So they could, you know, obviously they're in the now you know, Motu, and so they decided, okay, we got to put a rest to this because we're running out of characters and we got to make more money, so we could either go back or we could go forward. And they started to go back, and then at the last second they said, nah, let's just go all the way into the future, make He-Man smaller, give him a mullet, and
I know,
put him in space,
put him in space,
make the toys way less cool.
Actually, eyeballs in Skeletor's head.
You compare this to the space aspect that they went with, like this is way better.
Don't know why they decided to go that route. I think they messed up big time.
Well, obviously, so the Powers of Grayskull was a spinoff of Motu, and Motu actually transpired into Motu Adventures of He-Man. So it wasn't actually a spinoff per se. Advance. So I think that's why I think they decided to cancel the Powers of Grayskull. So there's a little bit of a difference there.
It does say there was a mini comic, Jeff. You
there
to
was.
Click, you
there was
click
a mini
that
comic.
Real quick?
Yep, there
I'm
was a mini
dead
comic.
Wrong. Classic Mega.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, there was a mini.
The Legend Begins.
While Jeff's looking it up, I was reading one of the classic mini comics that features Titus in it, where He-Man goes back in time. And I thought it was hilarious that, because they're in pre-Eternia, so He-Man's talking to Hero and Grayskull and all these guys.
This is the classics.
This
right?
is the classics.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They refer to it as pre-Eternia. It's hilarious. Like Hero's like, "Welcome to pre-Eternia," and I'm like, "How would you know it's pre? What?
Yeah. Wouldn't it just be Eternia to you?
Eternia to you?
Yeah. It's pronounced pre-Eternia.
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 Yeah. Pre-Eternia. Yeah.
But then we were talking about the transition to the space He-Man, and I think they did a really clever thing in that mini comic. Where at the end of it, where Skeletor gets all jacked up, and what was the name of the Triceratops that had like lasers on its head?
Oh man,
oh, it was Terrorsaur, something like that. I forget. Yeah,
laser, something, whatever.
Bionatops.
That's what it was.
Bionatops.
So a wounded Skeletor sees like Bionatops coming by, and he uses his spell and he pulls all his like bionic parts out of Bionatops, basically kills him.
Right.
And they all like form onto Skeletor, and it looks just like the space Skeletor.
He made armor. Real
and
quick.
He made armor out of like Bionatops' bionic parts.
Whoa!
What comic is this?
This is one of the classics ones. It's in the it's in the Bible. I'll have to show you. It's one of the last ones in the Bible.
I gotta read this.
Yeah, we got to page 540, and we're like, okay,
there's
something else for a minute.
Pages.
It's become a reference manual for us now.
It's something
that's
else.
Pretty, that's a pretty brutal origin story, pulling all the metal off of another character and putting it on yourself.
Yeah,
it was well done. The classics mini comics did a good job.
They're really good.
They did
all
an
back
incredible
together.
Job.
Yep. I did read the mini comic that came with Dare, which I know he's not regarded by a lot of people, but I love Dare. He has a special place in my heart. But.
So you know, like in the 80s, all those guys that were doing Motu, they were just doped up on cocaine, meth, heroin, everything that they could find. And then the classics guys, they're just doped up on Red Bulls and Monsters, you know?
Exactly.
Okay, we got to figure all this out, guys.
Yeah. Do tomorrow.
But yeah, so I mean, but Titus, I mean, what you see is what you get. There's no secret powers. He's just big, strong giant who can kill other big, strong giants
and build castles.
And build castles. That's a power too.
Are we ready to deathmatch it up here?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Let's do it.
All right, so I only have 1 point this time. I don't have the litany like I do against
you. Don't really need much, apparently. Yeah.
I'm not even taking the good one because my partner Lee's going to do the planet smashing Apache Chief.
I mean, you have to.
Right.
He can grow to infinite.
Me and Eddie are just looking at each other. It's like, yep.
I think the real edge that we have, though,
I do have one argument back, though.
Okay, good.
If you look at Titus and you look at Apache Chief, they look almost identical. Other than one's
true.
One's Native American and one's white.
They could be brothers.
Yeah, like both have long hair, both have headbands, both have like sleeveless vest things.
Yeah, they both complement each other's wardrobes.
Boots. Yes. Yeah, they're like the key that I think Apache Chief has is his clothes, magic, because they can grow, not grow. Yeah. Titus's clothes, not so magic. Yeah.
His boots are magical. They look gorgeous. I don't. If you don't think those boots are fabulous, something is wrong. I mean,
seriously,
he's got the power of Vogue.
I'm telling you, the power of style is nothing to be
compared. He's ready to battle disco. Apache Chief. Where'd you get those shoes?
That's right.
Before they battle to the death, Apache Chief stops.
What are those?
Those are awesome.
He sees those boots and he just holds up a ding. And then they start fighting. Thumbs ups, and then he starts fighting because them boots are on fleek, as the kids say.
That's right.
Anything, I know you. Did you want anything? That's my 1 point. Why Apache Chief?
Yeah, magical clothes. I mean, how can you go wrong?
Magical clothes.
Magical clothes. And he grows bigger than the planet.
You have a character who can grow the size of not even a planet. He said
a universe. Bigger than a planet.
As big as a galaxy.
Yes.
I mean, and so Titus is just. He can't compete. You can eat him.
I'm only so big.
I want to know the physics of that, though. It's like, as you're starting to grow and your boots are, like, crushing the planet that you're occupying, do you, like, jump off?
That's
into
right.
Space?
Yeah, when do you jump off the planet?
And when do you jump off the planet without, like, crushing the planet that you're jumping off?
What do you do? Hold your breath?
Yeah, and then once you get out of space.
Yeah, it's like...
They had another episode where he battles a monster that's living inside the moon, and so Apache Chief is standing on the Earth, and his whole foot covers the whole eastern seaboard, so crushed the whole eastern United States under his
shoes. I'm saying, man, the comic book writers back then got away with murder.
Hanna-Barbera.
Hanna-Barbera. Yeah, so, you know, same, right? You know what I mean? Same. Yeah. They're cut from the same cloth. They're sitting there like, and then he stands on the earth. What about the ocean? Shut up. Fire that guy.
So his foot gets wet.
Apache Chief has an advantage there, too, because Apache Chief has a narrator. We got the narrator. Apache Chief grows bigger, and today he's standing on the eastern seaboard. And
he had that great sound effect, too, when he would get bigger. It was like the wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, that narrator, Justice League, are super friends. I love that guy. When the transition scenes, would be like...
Yes. Meanwhile, at the...
Yes.
Hall of Justice. Yes. He would over-explain everything. Batman is on the bat computer doing something, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, dude, I can see it.
Yeah.
Like, he's not an idiot
right
watching
now.
It. That dude has to narrate this fight.
Yes.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Meanwhile, yes. Titus is getting rolled by Apache Chief.
I love
it. Look at those boots.
Yes, we got to have the narrator from Super
Those
Friends.
Boots are fabulous.
That's right.
All right, that's all we got for Apache Chief. What do we got for Titus?
Titus sees Apache Chief and takes off his helmet, lays it on the ground, and kisses his fingers and points to the sky to King Grayskull and says, I'm about to join you, buddy.
The only other thing I could see that could happen
is as
Apache Chief's starting to grow, Titus boops him on the head.
Getting that booper.
He continues to grow and explodes his head inside of the booper.
Jeff.
And then it's night night for Apache Chief.
I like that because the booper's not
dead
getting
body
any bigger.
Just continues to grow, and then his oceans turn into red blood.
Headless body just gets huge,
consumes the whole planet.
Oh no, we all lose in that
all
one.
All the blood comes into the Red Sea.
Yeah. Oh no! So as he's turning in, he quick boops him, captures him in there, and then cuts his head right off. Right.
Beep.
Does it? Because Apache Chief just gets big, right? He doesn't have super strength.
He can't even
fight.
It
grows
it's just commensurate to his size.
He does also have, they show him in several episodes, he does have some maybe precognitive or some mild psychic powers. He can communicate with animals.
But not slice-proof skin.
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, that would be a timing thing.
Yeah, if you could boop him at just the right moment, that head splattering.
Kind of a long shot.
It is a long shot.
Because he would probably get big. He'd probably see Titus coming. Before, you know, like, oh, and how fast is it? How long does it take to say a nuk chuck, you know? And he's like, And that's Chuck. He has to say it a bunch of times, though, doesn't he?
Yes, each time he grows.
He can't just say it one time and keep growing.
Well, one time he says it one time, he gets 50 feet, and then it just keeps exponentially.
But even at 50 feet, I mean, Titus is, I mean, if you look at
his boober's probably not good.
I'm just saying that Titus' character in comparison to the He-Man is...
Titus is probably like a good 25, 30 feet tops.
Yeah, so even at like the...
He's building sized, but 50 feet, I mean...
Right, even at the lowest setting, Apache Chief.
He'd have to like sneak up behind him.
Get him while he's sleeping.
Giant sneak.
Giant sneak. Like,
so in the timing realm, it would maybe work, but I think we're gonna have to give
I think Apache Chief.
We'll give it to Apache Chief.
He just like, bink. Just flicks him with his finger. You call yourself giant?
Bink. And steals his boots.
That's right.
Enough joke. Uses him for keychains.
That's right. That's
keychains. What's that?
Oh, man. And then everybody's like, he was killed by Megator. That's what it was. It was Megator.
Megator.
It wasn't a big Indian.
And then Modulok finds the booper later on.
That's right. Makes
there we go. See, it's all canon.
His dead body keeps growing.
And that's how the Purple Mountains of Eternity were made. Out of the corpse of Apache Chief.
Chief's dead body. That's funny.
There you go.
Why are those mountains in the shape of a body without a head?
Pre-Eternian myth for you kids.
My goodness.
Are we ready for round three?
All right, round three.
Round three. Ready to do this.
Okay.
Mega guys.
What's our matchup?
The matchup.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yeah.
This is Skeletor versus Cobra Commander with a little caveat in a slap fight.
Yes. I feel like we have this one, Jeff.
I feel we do too.
No magic. No magic. Just a slap.
And what was the one word that Cobra Commander was known for?
Retreat!
That's true. Skeletor never yelled that out.
Nope, we win.
Go home.
I would say, first of all, let's just go under like, we'll give a quick backstory on Skeletor. People are probably pretty familiar, but like, depending on
all of our mega fans are like, what, they're going to talk about Skeletor for once?
Exactly.
Tricked you.
We always avoid Skeletor and He-Man.
Skeletor, depending on the canon, originally he was just the bad guy. You know what I mean? There really wasn't a lot of thought put into him. He was originally going to be Demo Man.
Correct.
Yeah, like looked much more monstrous than he really looked. He had like a bone in his hair, for a ponytail.
Yeah, he was crazy looking. Yeah.
And he turned into what he is as Skeletor, and that was kind of it. Skeletor, he's got a skull for a face. Moving on, he's clearly evil. When they came out with the 2002 reboot, masterfully, they turned him into a character called Keldor, which the rumor was that he was like somehow related to Randor.
They were stepbrothers.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay.
And that Keldor lived in a whole different dimension, though, right? Or did he?
Different planet.
Different planet.
Yes.
Maybe you should take this one, Jeff.
Since I don't remember the planet's name.
I don't.
I think he was Agar was the
Gar,
name of his race.
That's what it was.
I don't know if it was the planet's name, but he was Agar. Yeah, they were the blue skin.
They looked like dark elves.
Same race as Shakoti.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I actually think Cyclone or Skyclone.
Skyclone, yep.
He's got blue skin. I think he's another Gar as well.
That's correct, yep. Anybody who's got blue skin besides Orko.
Oh, man.
Would be from
the Gar people. Did anybody on the Motu universe come from Eternia? It's like, it seems like
I don't think so.
Eternia was a dead, empty planet.
I think it was just Randor. I think it was just Randor.
Randor sitting there by himself.
You know what I wish I had?
This sucks.
Friends. And then all these planes start crashing and everybody's tumbling in. Like, ooh, friends.
Did you see my sleeves?
That's right.
Jack, you couldn't resist.
Let me cook up the fryer really quick and get some Whoppers going,
Burger
too.
Burger King. So this, now Skeletor is Keldor. That's his name. And he decides, I'm going to go to Eternia and basically take over and take it for my own and get the power of Grayskull the whole 9 years.
Right, so they're trying to steal the power of Grayskull from Castle Grayskull.
Yep.
And
King Randor and the Masters are defending this
Right, and it's not King Randor at the time.
Oh, yeah, it was like General
Randor. Yeah, he was just
Randor.
A warrior.
Yep. And so they step in. Keldor shows up through a portal, classic, with his bad guys, Beastman. It was like the whole cadre of...
Yep.
And then he has a vial of acid he's going to hurl at Randor.
Yeah, so they're having an epic sword fight, and then Randor ends up besting Keldor. Throws his sword away. He's like, oh, no, please, I surrender. And he's like, you never surrender. What's that? And then he throws this vial of acid at Randor. Randor deflects it in this awesome slow-mo move.
Sight.
And then it smashes all over Keldor's face and burns his face off.
Off! They don't show it getting burnt off. They just see the steam. He covers it up, and then you just see the like just steam come off his face.
Yeah, so then he goes flying away, and everybody retreats, and then he runs to Hordak, and Hordak, as he's dying, he's like, please save me. And so Hordak's, I will save you, but you have to...
You're mine
forever. Yeah. And so he's like, okay, so then he turns him into Skeletor. Very, very Megatron, Galvatron.
Darth Vader-ish. Yeah, I mean, exactly. You name it. But so that's kind of the loose story of Skeletor. Then later on, King Hiss comes into the picture, but that's a whole separate thing. But Skeletor is the yin yang again to He-Man, and leads an entire group of other masters of the universe, but the bad guys, and hatches schemes and tries to basically just kind of thwart He-Man and take things over. And his whole quest is to get into Castle Grayskull. Grayskull is kind of viewed as this almost neutral place that whoever is in control of it can wield the power of it, and that's what he's after. And he's yoked.
He's
got muscles and pecs and abs on his abs. And
he does.
Yeah.
Well, you can't eat any sugar.
You can't eat sugar.
Only protein.
All protein, all day long. Right. Clearly, with most of his adventures, he does not succeed. So I guess there is that with Cobra Commander.
Right.
But he doesn't just yell retreat. I'll say that much.
He just does it. Silently.
A couple of the times in the He-Man show, he did put them in a pickle. Yes. Several times, actually. There's the one where they had the comet. That's a bonkers one.
That is a bonkers
one. I love that one so much, where the comets are sentient.
Correct.
They're like, oh, hello, He-Man. I'm a comet. I need to.
Comet.
Yeah, and then he's able to like arrest that comet's movement and harness its powers, and it makes him more powerful, and he's actually like causing some trouble. And there's another episode where he gets he absconds a device that Man-at-Arms makes.
Yes.
Skeletor's everywhere.
That's right. My favorite
little
episode.
Tiny Skeletors
all
around.
These photocopies of himself, and there's all these miniature Skeletors running everywhere. It's the best.
Meow, meow, meow. So good. We've also seen Skeletor as someone not to be trifled with. So he is subservient to Hordak, and Hordak is subservient to Hordak Prime.
Horde Prime.
Thank you. And in the Christmas special of a He-Man She-Ra Christmas special, which if no one's watched that, you absolutely don't have to watch this. But you should watch it. It's fun. There's a scene in it where Horde Prime comes down on Eternia. He's prepared to steal the children. It's never quite explained why he wants them. Probably to eat them.
Let's just be honest. Squeeze out their screams.
Squeeze their juices.
That's right.
So Skeletor is leading them up to the point where Horde Prime will take them away. And then Skeletor is touched by the Christmas spirit briefly. And he's like, I'm still going to use this Christmas spirit to do bad things. He shoots the laser. He shoots a magical blast out of his Havoc staff into Horde Prime's ship. Blasts a hole in it.
Right.
And then
his ship goes down.
Yeah. So you're like, well, he just brought down his boss. His boss. I mean, that's not just an easy thing to do. So he can clearly kick in faces when he wants to. But yeah, Skeletor.
And he helped the kids escape, and everything was good.
But he didn't like it.
No, he hated it.
I don't like to feel good.
I like to feel evil.
But yeah, he's also known for some great. Calling his cohorts horrible puns and names. Yes. And he went through a magical mirror one time and then reached through and punched it. And
broke the magical mirror.
So nobody could...
I'm out. Screw this.
So there's a lot of shade Skeletor has too with him. So he's not just going to beat you up. He's going to do it, and he's going to make fun of you as it happens.
He's got like 10,000 followers on Twitter too or something like that.
What was his name again?
You're talking about Grumpy Skeletor?
Grumpy Skeletor.
He is hugely followed.
Yeah.
Hugely followed. Which, if you're not following Grumpy Skeletor, oh my gosh, you need it. He's on Facebook and Twitter.
So funny.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then I guess with that, that's really... And I mean, he has the Havoc Staff.
Correct.
Which is a pretty powerful weapon.
Right.
In and of itself.
But we would be remiss if we didn't mention that there are other versions of Skeletor as well.
Oh my goodness. We're going to go with the Future Armor one again?
There's the Future Armor. There's the Frank Langella. From the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is pretty BA.
Yeah. Well,
golden armor.
Golden armor Skeletor.
Then you have the Alcala version of the comic books,
yep.
who is probably the most badass version of Skeletor. Then obviously you have the 2000s, and we won't mention the new adventures of He-Man.
Let's not even Skeletor. About that Skeletor. That was a bad idea.
That was so bad.
I think there's one where he has the claws too. Right?
Terror claws. That was very much the toy.
Yes.
And the comic. They had one where he had the terror claws.
That dragon blaster. He's got a dragon next, like the crawl on his back, and it squirts water.
That's kind of cool.
Like hit his chest and like his
battle armor.
Battle armor. Yep. Yes.
You know, I think you called Terror Claw Skeletor Lee Press-On Nail Skeletor one time. That was great.
Yep. I was thinking a slap fight, that might be what you want.
If you got Terror Claw Skeletor, you don't want to be slap fighting that guy. No.
Like, okay, we're going to do this. And then Cobra Commander sees those claws and
retreat.
But even without the Terror Claws, Skeletor's got those like black fingernails that are already
pointy. He does have claws already built in.
He's already there.
He's like, just we're going to turn it up to 11. We're going to give me some. Did he go to Man at Arms for that, I wonder?
Exactly. He's like, hey, put these on. What I love about Skeletor is like his name is Skeletor. He's got a face that's all bones.
Yes.
But he's like, people don't quite know who I am. So he's going to make a breastplate that has bones in the middle of
that's
it.
That's right. And he's going to sit on a throne of bones.
Made of bones.
That's right. But his castle is
Snake Mountain. Yeah.
But he's always trying to get to Castle Grayskull, which is bones.
I know.
That's so confusing as a kid. I always thought it was the bad castle.
Yeah. What I loved about Snake Mountain too was that the water that ran over its waterfall was red.
Yeah.
Implying it was blood.
Yeah.
Right? But like no one ever commented on
it. I always thought
like,
it was lava.
Was it lava? Yeah, okay. I thought it was like a river of blood. I thought it was like we're going up Old Testament.
That was Apache chief blood after Titus.
There's rivers of it.
His body's just bleeding out.
It just keeps growing.
Follow the river. All it is just his neck with no head on it.
We need more blood for the river. Sprinkle more dust on that Indian.
But that Skeletor, more or less, for this, there he's at. He's ready to go. He's flexing his muscular arms. He's getting his nails sharpened.
All right. Cobra Commander then?
Cobra Commander.
So Cobra Commander, if you don't know, is from G.I. Joe. From the toy line, and he's been in the comic books and the cartoons and just about everything. He's a leader of a terrorist organization called Cobra, which is the principal antagonist for the Joes, of course, as we know. He was created by Marvel Comics writer Larry Hama, who envisioned his character as being in love with the sound of his own voice. He drew inspiration from William F. Buckley, I guess, is where he kind of got that
nice.
From. But I think the most distinctive, at least for me, was the raspy voice by Chris Latta on the cartoon. I mean,
so good.
Gosh, if you're a kid of the 80s, you know that voice from G.I. Joe or from Starscream and the Transformers.
My two favorite characters from both shows.
Yeah, both of these characters have great voice actors that did them.
Amazing.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got Alan Oppenheimer for
Chris
Skeletor.
Latta. Amazing.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Hands down. Like, Starscream is probably one of my favorite characters.
Oh, totally, without a doubt.
Yeah. But Cobra Commander, so good. Such a whiny, complaining.
Sniveling kind of. Yeah. He was started out, I guess, in the storyline as a used car salesman.
Nice.
Way back in the
day.
That
makes sense. That makes sense.
He had a knack of concocting creative schemes, if you remember in the comic book, or excuse me, the cartoon.
Oh, yes.
Always coming up with just these bizarre schemes on how to take over the world.
Didn't they have a TV show? It was like Cobra TV.
It was a telethon.
Yeah.
So they could raise money.
That's so good.
Evil telethon that you could call into.
Yes.
There was like Destro on the phone, like
That's
taking
right.
calls.
Yet in the background,
and
the
good.
Baroness showing what they've raised so far. So she's, we've raised $2 million. And you know, I can imagine going to NBC or ABC and say, hey, we're an evil terrorist organization. Would you let us put on a telethon?
Can we use like public fundraising dollars?
Hi, we're ISIS, and we'd like to raise some money on CBS.
Yes.
Go for it.
So they had all these different acts that they were doing and different things. But let's see. I think another one
make
was
a woman pretty ugly machine.
Yes.
I just noticed that. Sorry.
Clone dinosaurs, miniaturized troops that could stow away in Christmas presents.
Oh, my
God. And laser gun to gleefully carve his picture onto the moon.
Well,
I think he wanted to be
on
Mount Rushmore, too, I think.
Yeah,
because
that's how you take over the world. Carve your face into the moon.
I love it.
Cobra sunscreen.
I remember that one.
Sunscreen?
We'll destroy the ozone and then sell
Cobra sunscreen. He's a genius, Cobra Commander.
The writers for the cartoon show, I found this, that they thought he was more like Yosemite Sam. So really? If you remember Yosemite Sam, he always had these tough talking, had a lot of weapons, but always lost badly. So that's kind of what they likened him to in the comic, or the cartoon, excuse me.
Yeah.
And he was also known as Baron Ironblood.
Really?
Leader of the Red Shadows.
Wow.
Another...
In the cartoon or in the comic?
I think that was a comic book that they had a different background on him.
Well, I mean, just like Skeletor and all these other characters we talked about, Cobra Commander's got like three or four different life stories. Like, he was a car salesman in the comic book that somehow became the leader of a terrorist organization.
Right.
Like, how does that happen? In the cartoon, well, when the G.I. Joe movie came out, it turns out he was like a
scientist.
Snake dude, something went wrong and grew like eight eyes on his face.
He was doing experiments and it like blew up in his face. And it made that's my favorite version, by the way.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I kind of like that one.
It's my favorite. Awesome. That's my favorite version.
We're not going that version because I don't want to get in a slap fight if I have eight eyes on my face. That's not a good idea to get into a slap
I'm all eyes.
That's true.
You poked me in the eye. Which one?
That's true. I love that how they did that though, because it kind of gave a reason as to why you didn't see his face. It gave a lot of backstory to that.
It did.
I have a great. When you're ready, I want to talk about some of that G.I. Joe movie stuff, if you don't mind, just for a minute.
No, that's fine. There's one other thing I was going to mention is that he used his own sister as a test subject, creating the Neo Vipers, making her an agent known as the Baroness.
Oh, that's his sister.
That was another iteration of her side story that probably isn't canon, but...
That's a little evil.
So, yeah. He used his sister as a test subject. And I think there was another one, too, where his origin is his brother... I think was killed by Snake Eyes in a drunk driving.
Yeah, that was the,
like that.
He was a car salesman. His brother was killed in the army or something like that. Or it was the government's fault, basically. That's why he's like, well, I'm going to become a terrorist. And he worked his way up the ranks and became the leader. That's the comic book.
I see.
From Marvel comic version.
And I know Lee's read more of the comic book, but the comic book is way darker than the cartoon, which is no surprise.
They tend to be.
Yeah, there's no Cobra sunscreen in the cartoon. He's like hijacking nukes and he's doing all like the normal, terrorist stuff.
Right.
And,
He's more effectual in the comics.
Yeah.
But some versions of the later versions too, they say that his efficiency or ineffectiveness in the cartoon was all ruse. To try to get the underlings to become more self-sufficient and become stronger. So that's what they said. The reason he was such a buffoon in the cartoon was, it was all ruse. I'm actually tough.
Well, in the movie, they went straight up hardcore and were like, Serpentor's the guy now. And then they threw it Cobra Commander. And didn't he continue to turn into he kept
snake.
Mutating.
Well, he got hit with the spores.
Yeah, and it made him continue to,
spores.
He went full snake and then slithered. And that was it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Done.
He's gone now.
Yeah.
That was their Transformers the movie move.
Gosh. It's the same way they killed Starscream.
Yeah.
They had in the
it's like right when he gets awesome, he's gone.
They had in the one of the Transformers episode where it's in the future and Cobra Commander is there in the future.
I didn't know.
They went into the future 2005 or 2002 or something that.
Yeah.
It's just a brief appearance with this guy with the classic metal face thing. Is there in the future.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't remember what episode it was. I'll have to look it up. But
all right, I'm ready for Eddie's G.I. Joe.
I love the Transformers. The G.I. Joe movie was probably one of the craziest, most insane.
So you're talking the animated, not
animated.
The
animated. Right. This is 1986?
86, 87, something like that.
I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, this is insane. Mm-hmm. This is the craziest.
It was so over the top.
Because G.I. Joe, up to that point, shot shy of evil telethons and moon faces. It was a pretty straightforward show. Good guys, bad guys, moral at the end, and then we're all on to different things. And the movie now is there's this secret organization, and it's a secret civilization that lives under the ground that's made of snake people, and they have all these different bonkers over the top. They had the guy with the wings who
Nemesis
could
Nemesis Enforcer. Yeah,
yes.
I'm on a first name basis with Nemesis.
you and Nemesis just hang out.
We text.
And then they had that one guy whose body was normal, but he had that weird eye patch. It was like a weird
globula. Globulus.
And he was voice by. That guy, his voice.
He was the penguin in the old Batman
stuff. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Meredith Burgess.
Burgess Meredith.
Yep.
I'm super. Yeah, not even close.
No, you're on a last name. You're on a last name, first name, basis. It just took on this whole like otherworldly feeling that was bigger than anything G.I. Joe had ever done before.
The stakes were high.
Yeah, right. And then they straight up what you think is kill Duke. You know, right. He takes a cobra to the heart. Like the Serpentor straightens out a cobra like a spear and throws it. And as a kid, I'm trying to digest all of this, and I'm just like, this is too much. It's too much.
Yeah.
And it was almost like too icky. Like it was just like these slimy snake people. And fast forward to now, I'm doing all this research for Paranormal Dads, another podcast that I help co-host. I didn't realize this. There is an entire story in the Hindu religion about a race of different types of human called the Naga that live under the earth. It's all snake centered. And essentially, once you read up on the Naga and their whole like hierarchy, it's exactly the G.I. Joe movie.
Right.
And I feel like the writers must have come across this and been like, we just found our movie, boys. And then they high five over the pile of cocaine.
Nobody will ever stumble upon this.
No one will figure this out. But it was just crazy because all these, even Nemesis Enforcer and Globulus, all these different weird, like icky, slimy characters. These are all kind of characters. They're not named the same thing.
Sure.
But you see these things play out in this whole Naga myth. And it was just crazy how they kind of pulled from, you know, history to tell a G.I. Joe story.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right.
So anyway, that was my observation.
I just remember the G.I. Joe movie, the first 2 to 3 minutes, that intro sequence where Cobra's like parachuting onto the Statue of Liberty. And the G.I. Joe like comes out of the Statue of Liberty and they're all fighting. I was openly weeping as a child. It was so amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And then,
then
it cuts to the movie you're talking about. I'm like, what just happened? Go back to the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Exactly.
That intro is off the charts. Yeah.
I just wonder what guys like, because G.I. Joe obviously existed before the 1980s. It was a whole separate toy line, 12-inch figures with real beards and like cloth clothes. They were dolls, you know, they were still action figures and they were just big. And I wonder what like our dads would have thought seeing the G.I. Joe animated movie and they just rolled their eyes like, what is this?
Right.
Snake.
That stuff doesn't happen.
Globulus.
Yeah. Shut up, Dad. You change your G.I. Joe's clothes.
Exactly.
Like a doll.
You gotta brush his beard.
Yeah.
You're brushing your G.I. Joe's hair. Shut up.
Shut up.
Yeah. What a great series.
It is.
Anyway.
It
are we ready to smack down?
We're ready to smack down, I think.
Just smack around, I guess.
Smack around, I think.
Smack. I think for sheer slapping power. We're dealing with Cobra Commander. I mean, with Skeletor here. He's got stronger slaps.
Yes.
His arms are clear. He's a bodybuilder.
He is swole.
Yeah,
bro.
I think we're ready to concede that he is ripped and he has claws.
Yeah.
And we're probably in trouble on this.
Now, if you're going with Cobra Commander with a mask on.
Yes.
We're going with
the
helmet.
With a helmet.
Yes,
yeah,
helmet.
Not the hood.
Not
we're
the
going
hood.
With the silver mask.
Not the cloth hood.
Nope,
full helmet.
Yeah.
And not the eight eyes either. As aforementioned, that would suck in a slap fight.
Yeah. So he may not scratch him with the claws.
Right.
But he's getting walled.
But
wall-y.
Still, you're getting smacked.
He might hurt
around.
His hand.
He's getting his bell rung.
Well, I'm remembering back to that DC comic on the, I think it was The Origin of Trapjaw, where Skeletor, like, he rips off Trapjaw's arm, and then he just, like, decks Trapjaw, and his, like, jaw goes flying off.
Yeah.
I was reading that, I was like, oh, we're in trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
He punched a dude's jaw off.
He's slapping his whole helmet just goes.
Exactly. Like, he went toe-to-toe with King Randor, who I guess is a good in a sword fight. But
I guess.
But, I'm thinking, if they're going to slap fight each other, man, I'm thinking Skeletor wins this one. That's kind of
the only chance I think Cobra Commander has is if he cheats, like, he's in the old car salesman and he puts like, you know, a brick in his glove or something.
Yes. That's right.
The Bugs Bunny move.
Yeah, tries to do something.
Puts on a metal gauntlet and
and they'll be like, we'll start on the count of three. One.
Pow.
Well, plus Skeletor has no face. It's all nerve endings.
Yeah, I know.
It's all bones.
How do you slap a skull?
Yeah.
Other than maybe he'll knock off his jaw.
It just knocks his head off on the floor.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe, but isn't he like enchanted by Hordak to like, that's kind of the whole point.
He just comes right back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see Skeletor just go ahead and just letting himself get wailed on.
You're nothing. You wimp. You buffoon.
And then one shot. Bam.
Yep. Exactly.
He's done.
Jaw comes off.
His jaw flies off. But his helmet somehow stays on. How did my jaw fly out of my helmet?
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, it's a great. And I think we're also invoking that image that you drew up.
Right.
Yes.
For the baddie bunch.
That yes. is an amazing
that was so good.
Piece of art.
We'll have to make sure that's in the show notes.
Got to put that in the show notes. You can't have talk about a Skeletor Cobra Commander slap fight and not show the baddie bunch.
I think the best part of this fight would not be the slap fight, because I think it'd be over like in a punch or two.
Yeah, you do.
But I think you got to get like 10 minutes of trash talking.
Smack
you
talk.
Don't let them like hit each other. I just want to listen to those two
that
voice actors.
That would be great.
That would be so fun.
That would be great.
Oh my gosh.
Like all the little put downs that those two characters had. Oh, it'd be
amazing. Oh yeah, it'd be a verbal abuse for at least 10 minutes.
I wonder if it was, what's his name? Chris Latta?
Latta.
I wonder if, because like Alan Oppenheimer usually ad-libbed all of his lines.
Really?
Not all of them, but all those put downs. So he started just ad-libbing that stuff. So I wonder if that was something that Chris Latta was.
That's a good question.
Either way, so in that, if we pin those two up against each other, I think Oppenheimer would probably win. Probably.
Well, we do know Cobra Commander is good at one thing for sure:
retreating.
Well, there's that, but it's also tossing a shipwreck out of a chair. Like
that's true. That's true. So he did slap him out of a chair.
I know.
So.
I didn't want to bring that up.
I didn't want to deny your guy.
I know the wrecker's your boy, but
I'll always stand by the wreck. But yeah, there's no denying that gif. I mean, he just takes him and just throws him out of that chair like he wasn't even in it.
Yeah,
and he falls out of it like. His hat falls off.
Oh my
gosh. He backhanded him.
So he's like, psha! Yeah. So, I mean, Skeletor, I mean, Cobra Commander clearly has some slapping power in him.
He can toss a sailor like nobody's business.
Yeah, exactly.
Toss a sailor.
His sailor tossing, he wins. Skeletor shows up dressed up as Shipwreck. Oh no. I wore the wrong thing.
To wear my Cracker Jack outfit.
The classic Skeletor line. What?
What? That's so funny.
Yeah, that's a great lineup. But yeah, I think Skeletor is gonna put the pimp, the strong hand on us.
So overall we're 1-1 in a draw.
1-1 in a draw.
Yeah.
So it is kind of tied up on this one.
It's up to the fans.
The fans, listener, you've got to decide because we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Who wins?
Who wins? Who loses? But it's all fun and games.
I think we all just won this one. That's what I'm saying.
Definitely.
The listeners won.
Super fun.
I'll put a link in the show notes how to get hold of all these guys and definitely hit them up and listen to Mega and go check out Lee's art and have him get one of those prints and you can decide the slap fight there.
Yeah,
so much fun live and in person. So.
Eddie, Jeff,
well, thanks
Lee
guys. I really appreciate it. So much fun
getting
together and talking about nerdy stuff. I hope we can do it again and we'll come up with three more fights and three more deaths or three more draws or three more slaps. I don't know what it'll be.
Awesome.
Three slaps and a Z formation
for all the details from this episode and past episodes.
So we're going to do Samurai versus Jetsu.
I'm up for it.
No.
Wreck and scratch.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Good journey.
I felt and heard the load shift. Like, and I was like, oh no. It was all packed in, and I look, and like it was like perfectly timed. I'm looking, and I see the entertainment center going wiggle, 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 like wobbling back and forth, like it's possessed. And then all of a sudden, it just shoots straight up. Just
what?
It just shoots straight up, like the wind got underneath it and just lifted it right up in the air. It shot up straight in the air, like in Ghostbusters, like just boom, and it's airborne. And I'm like, ah! It's like in the air, and I'm like, that's gonna land on someone's hood of it behind us.
Oh my gosh.
And it's in the air and it lands on the ground, thank God, no cars, and it smashes and it's still kind of in like it's on the interstate. And I'm like, what do we do? And then we look back and a semi literally runs over it.
Done.
And it explodes into a million pieces just like on like the Inner Sandman music video.
Yes.
And I'm like, there's nothing we can do now. I mean, there's just chunks of flotsam all over the freaking highway.
Like he was a Miata behind you.
Oh my gosh. We could have easily killed someone.